This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi.
Featuring author, psychologist, and daily contributor, Siobhan Scott.
The Black Swan murder trial. It is getting underway. Ashley Benefield is her name. We've been talking about it on and off for the last year, but now she is going to court for the actual murder trial. If we rewind a little bit, we'll remember some court hearing dates where the judge said, I don't believe your story of abuse. I don't think it has one scintilla of truth to it. Well, they were in a custody battle. And lo and behold, shortly after that, her husband dies and is murdered by Ashley Benefield. She's saying it was self-defense. We'll find out what a jury thinks about that. Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author, joining me to discuss. This is a weird one. It's an interesting one to talk about. You don't want to, and I'm not victim blaming here or anything of that nature, but you can't always just take somebody at their word. And it seems there's a lot of people that like to do that, want to do that. We're already seeing people marching outside of the courthouse here going, we believe her. What's going on with this? And why do we have this penchant as a society to want to look at things objectively, but at the same point, I feel like we have more blinders on than ever before?
Yeah, I think it's the power of the internet to spin narratives and for people to want to rally around someone who, from the limited amount of information they have, someone that appears to be a victim. And of course, we have empathy for people who are victims.
Sure.
And that's a good thing. But there's been no evidence of this at this point. The trial hasn't happened. Mm-hmm. And people are taking this story and running with it. And yeah, echoes of the Karen Reed situation. And then once you get a group forming, you get this cohesive process and everybody reinforces each other. And, the other thing that comes to mind is I'm going to stick my neck out and say I don't have hard data on it, but just from what I've seen, when there is a hostile child custody battle going on, mm-hmm. about 50% of the time, some person is making claims that the other party is abusing them or has abused the child in some way. And so I know people in CPS, they're always skeptical. You know, mm-hmm. when allegations of abuse are made and there's a custody battle, people want to win. They get incredibly angry, incredibly emotional. And most of the time, those allegations, when they're investigated, are found to not be true. So I think we want to respect people who make allegations. Mm-hmm. We want to listen to the evidence, look at it closely, but we have to be careful about swallowing a narrative, especially when we don't really know all the facts.
What plays into that with people just swallowing the narrative? The trend I've seen on these last two, from Karen Reed to now Ashley Benefield, you have an attractive woman and the first thing that goes through my mind is, there's a lot of the men who are out here marching or doing these things that they, in some weird way in their mind, think maybe there's a chance. It's just nuts. But it's not just men. I mean, you have, moms out there, too, that are out there marching. It's not just that sort of a audience that's doing this sort of thing. But does looks play a big role in this sort of thing, is if someone's going to get behind it or not?
That's a really good point. And we know that physical appearance has everything to do with social relationships and people like conventionally, because there are all kinds of ways people can be attractive, but
sure,
there's a certain conventional mm-hmm. Style, and people who are attractive are more apt to get hired in jobs. They're more apt to be determined to be likable and good people. And, this is just a strange human bias, but yeah, I think there's a lot of sex appeal with her.
Mm-hmm. And that's what makes it, I think that's what draws people to this story. Cases like this are not extremely uncommon. That's the thing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's just certain ones we end up gravitating to and that the public wants to hear more about. So we end up talking about mm-hmm. those ones more. But this happens. And if she didn't look the way she did, I don't know that we'd be talking about this case.
That's
same with
right.
Karen Reed.
That's right.
And
if she were a woman of color, and it, you know, there would just be naturally less sympathy for her.
Yeah. It's a weird thing that we do with looking at this. Most of this case is she said, there's not a lot of he said because he's dead. How valuable is that to a jury versus actually having evidence? There's no bruising. She has a little scratch on her side that there's an image of, but it looks like she could have gotten it from walking next to a box that she was packing. Yeah. It does not appear to be some sort of physical abuse. And there's the allegations that she claims that these things happened. But again, not a lot of evidence. But there isn't always a lot of evidence in those sort of cases. I mean, unless there is bruising and such. So how do we make sure that we are getting reality here, getting the facts, and that we're not just dismissing this story in this case of what she has versus, you know, taking it seriously? Maybe there is some validity to this, but again, a lot of evidence.
Yeah. And it may be one of those things where a few things that she says are true and many things she says did not actually happen and it's been amplified. So it's incredibly hard to sort through these cases. And I think the jury have a very difficult job. I think a key piece of evidence, if they can admit it, would be the psych eval that was done by a psychologist during the custody eval. And I think that because you're going to have more in-depth personality testing, there's a lie scale built into the tests that I won't reveal how that's done because we're not supposed to reveal that.
Sure.
But it looks for people who are trying to give a favorable impression of themselves and they're not telling the truth. And so if that, as I'm assuming it's usually done, if that kind of testing were done, it would be really helpful for the jury to hear that evidence.
There was, in an interview that she had done, I believe it was a police interview. It was rather bizarre to me. For anyone who's been through some sort of traumatic event, like having a weapon pulled on you, it's in your brain. I mean, and I'm speaking from experience here of being in that situation of having a partner do that to me at one point in time. I remember every moment of it. I can tell you exactly where it came from, and I can tell, and without misconstruing it in my mind, going, "Oh, oops, it wasn't from their boot; it was from their waistband." And that's exactly what she did. She initially tells the story that he took it from his waistband at one point in time, threatening her. And then, it was from his boot. And then they question her on that. Oh, sorry, it must have been the waistband then, because she had two contradicting statements. How often are people mixing that up? I know the mind can screw things up, but we're talking about a very pivotal moment in someone's life.
Exactly. And that's one of the things in an interview that you look for. You ask the same question, but you phrase it differently and you ask it at different times. And if you get conflicting information rather than a consistent story, and people who are lying often forget what they said, you know, and they'll say something different. And that's kind of a red flag that they're manufacturing the tale.
But something that extreme, I would think that if you're manufacturing the tale, that would be one of the aspects you'd at least have down. You know, like,
it's surprisingly, though, how often people don't. They'll say one thing, and it's almost like the story in their head shifts, and they say something else, and they go back and forth and bounce around. So, yeah, if they were well rehearsed, you would think there would be more consistency, but often they screw up in that way.
That's interesting. Where someone, if they're going to spin the tale, that they mess up on key
they mess up
details.
I
get maybe the room was blue, but it was really you know, purple or something. But maybe those things. But the actual moment of is there any validity to it though? I guess would be the question. Can you know? It's a moment of trauma, but it's a very precise one. It's not one where there's a ton of things going on at once and you're trying to remember the order in which something happened, like a 9/11 where it's like, well, what order did these things take place?
Yeah.
It's a weapon being drawn at you. Is that something that if you were you went through that, you would like or have any chance of screwing up in your mind when you're recalling that?
It's always possible. It's always possible. And that's one of the things that that's hard to sort out. Is somebody just so upset and sort of cognitively impaired because they're so upset that they get the story wrong? It's always possible.
Yeah.
It's hard stuff to sort out. It really is.
Yeah, I mean, without a doubt, it's going to be interesting to see. I'm reserving my complete judgment till this thing is up, and I think that's a fair thing to do because maybe this is all legit. But as of right now, the evidence doesn't necessarily point in her favor of it being very legit. But we'll have to see as this thing gets underway.
Want to listen ad-free? Want advanced access to all of our interviews before anyone else?
Become a True Crime Today Premium Plus subscriber on Apple Podcasts.
You get every episode commercial-free,
so you can binge on true crime
until you can binge no more.
Search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts now, or go to our podcast page and sign up now.
More of the Hidden Killers podcast next.